She was a stout little vessel, and the government had generously offered to equip her with coal, provisions, clothing, etc., and send her across to the Falkland Islands for me to take down to Elephant Island. I accepted this offer gladly, and the trawler was in Port Stanley on June 10th. We started south at once. The weather was bad, but the trawler made good progress, steaming steadily at about 6 knots, and in the bright, clear dawn of the third day we sighted the peaks of Elephant Island. Hope ran high, but our ancient enemy, the pack, was lying in wait, and within 20 miles of the island the trawler was stopped by an impenetrable barrier of ice. The pack lay in the form of a crescent, with a horn to the west of the ship stretching north. Steaming northeast, we reached another horn, and saw that the pack, heavy and dense, then trended away to the east. We made an attempt to push into the ice, but it was so heavy that the trawler was held up at once and began to grind in the small, thick floes, so we cautiously backed out. The propeller, going slowly, was not damaged, though any moment I feared we might strip the blades. The island lay on our starboard quarter, but there was no possibility of approaching it. The Uruguayan engineer reported to me that he had 3 days' coal left, and I had to give the order to turn back. A screen of fog hid the lower slopes of the island, and the men watching from the camp on the beach could not have seen the ship. Northward we steamed again, with the engines knocking badly, and, after encountering a new gale, made Port Stanley with the bunkers nearly empty and the engines almost broken down. HMS Glasgow was in the port, and the British sailors gave us a hearty welcome as we steamed in. The Uruguayan government offered to send the trawler to Punta Arenas and have her dry docked there and made ready for another effort. One of the troubles on the voyage was that, according to estimate, the trawler could do 10 knots on 6 tons of coal a day, which would have given us a good margin to allow for lying off the ice. But in reality, owing to the fact that she had not been in dock for a year, she only developed a speed of 6 knots on a consumption of 10 tons a day. Time was precious, and these preparations would have taken too long. I thanked the government then for its very generous offer, and I want to say now that the kindness of the Uruguayans at this time earned my warmest gratitude. I ought to mention also the assistance given me by Lieutenant Ryan, a naval reserve officer who navigated the trawler to the Falklands and came south on the attempt at relief. The Instituto de Pesca went off to Montevideo, and I looked around for another ship. A British mail boat, the Orita, called at Port Stanley opportunely, and I boarded her with Worsley and Crean and crossed to Punta Arenas in the Magellan Straits. The reception we received there was heartening. The members of the British Association of Magellanes took us to their hearts. Mr. Alan MacDonald was especially prominent in his untiring efforts to assist in the rescue of our 22 companions on Elephant Island. He worked day and night, and it was mainly due to him that within 3 days they had raised a sum of £1,500 amongst themselves, chartered the schooner Emma, and equipped her for our use. She was a 40-year-old oak schooner, strong and seaworthy, with an auxiliary oil engine. Out of the complement of 10 men, all told, who were manning the ship, there were 8 different nationalities. But they were all good fellows, and understood perfectly what was wanted. The Chilean government lent us a small steamer, the Yelcho, to tow us part of the way. She could not touch ice, though, as she was built of steel. However, on July 12th, we passed her our tow rope and proceeded on our way. In bad weather, we anchored next day, and although the wind increased to a gale, I could delay no longer. So we hove up anchor in the early morning of the 14th. The strain on the tow rope was too great. With the crack of a gun, the rope broke. Next day the gale continued, and I will quote from the log of the Emma, which Worsley kept as navigating officer. 9 a.m., fresh increasing gale. Very rough, lumpy sea. 10 a.m., tow rope parted. 12 noon, similar weather. 1 p.m., tow rope parted again. Set foresail and forestay sail and steered southeast by south. 3 p.m., Yelcho hailed us and said that the ship's bilges were full of water. So were our decks, and they were short of coal. Sir Ernest told them that they could return to harbour. After this, the Yelcho steamed into San Sebastian Bay. After 3 days of continuous bad weather, we were left alone to attempt once more to rescue the 22 men on Elephant Island, for whom by this time I entertained very grave fears. At dawn on Friday, July 21st, we were within 100 miles of the island, and we encountered the ice in the half-light. I waited for the full day and then tried to push through. The little craft was tossing in the heavy swell, and before she had been in the pack for 10 minutes, she came down on a cake of ice and broke the bobstay. Then the water inlet of the motor choked with ice. The schooner was tossing like a cork in the swell, and I saw, after a few bumps, that she was actually lighter than the fragments of ice around her. Progress under such conditions was out of the question. I worked the schooner out of the pack and stood to the east. I ran her through a line of pack towards the south that night, but was forced to turn to the northeast, for the ice trended in that direction as far as I could see. We hove to for the night, which was now 16 hours long. The winter was well advanced, and the weather conditions were thoroughly bad. The ice to the southward was moving north rapidly. The motor engine had broken down, and we were entirely dependent on the sails. We managed to make a little southing during the next day, but noon found us 108 miles from the island. That night we lay off the ice in a gale, hove to, and morning found the schooner iced up. The ropes, cased in frozen spray, were as thick as a man's arm, and if the wind had increased much, we would have had to cut away the sails, since there was no possibility of lowering them. Some members of the scratch crew were played out by the cold and the violent tossing. The schooner was about 70 feet long, and she responded to the motions of the storm-racked sea in a manner that might have disconcerted the most seasoned sailors. I took the schooner south at every chance, but always the line of ice blocked the way. The engineer, who happened to be an American, did things to the engines occasionally, but he could not keep them running, and the persistent south winds were dead ahead. It was hard to turn back a third time, but I realized we could not reach the island under those conditions, and we must turn north in order to clear the ship of heavy masses of ice. So we set a northerly course, and after a tempestuous passage reached Port Stanley once more. This was the third reverse, but I did not abandon my belief that the ice would not remain fast around Elephant Island during the winter, whatever the armchair experts at home might say. We reached Port Stanley in the schooner on August 8th, and I learned there that the ship Discovery was to leave England at once and would be at the Falkland Islands about the middle of September. My good friend the governor said I could settle down at Port Stanley and take things quietly for a few weeks. The street of that port is about 1.5 miles long. It has the slaughterhouse at one end and the graveyard at the other. The chief distraction is to walk from the slaughterhouse to the graveyard. For a change, one may walk from the graveyard to the slaughterhouse. Ellaline Terrace was born at Port Stanley, a fact not forgotten by the residents, but she has not lived there much since. I could not content myself to wait for 6 or 7 weeks, knowing that 600 miles away my comrades were in dire need. I asked the Chilean government to send the Yelcho, the steamer that had towed us before, to take the schooner across to Punta Arenas, and they consented promptly, as they had done to every other request of mine. So, in a northwest gale, we went across, narrowly escaping disaster on the way, and reached Punta Arenas on August 14th. There was no suitable ship to be obtained. The weather was showing some signs of improvement, and I begged the Chilean government to let me have the Yelcho for a last attempt to reach the island. She was a small, steel-built steamer, quite unsuitable for work in the pack, but I promised that I would not touch the ice. The government was willing to give me another chance, and on August 25th I started south on the fourth attempt at relief. This time Providence favoured us. The little steamer made a quick run down in comparatively fine weather, and I found, as we neared Elephant Island, that the ice was open. A southerly gale had sent it northward temporarily, and the Yelcho had her chance to slip through. We approached the island in a thick fog. I did not dare to wait for this to clear, and at 10 a.m. on August 30th we passed some stranded bergs. Then we saw the sea breaking on a reef, and I knew that we were just outside the island. It was an anxious moment, for we had still to locate the camp, and the pack could not be trusted to allow time for a prolonged search in thick weather. But presently the fog lifted and revealed the cliffs and glaciers of Elephant Island. I proceeded to the east, and at 11:40 a.m. Worsley's keen eyes detected the camp, almost invisible under its covering of snow. The men ashore saw us at the same time, and we saw tiny black figures hurry to the beach and wave signals to us. We were about 1.5 miles away from the camp. I turned the Yelcho in, and within 30 minutes reached the beach with Crean and some of the Chilean sailors. I saw a little figure on a surf-beaten rock and recognized Wild. As I came nearer, I called out, "Are you all well?" And he answered, "We are all well, boss." And then I heard three cheers. As I drew close to the rock, I flung packets of cigarettes ashore.